And welcome to this quick and dirty special edition of What's On Joe Mind. This is special edition number 28, and it's our collective opinions, thoughts, review of the major motion picture, G.I. Joe Retaliation. Finally, it's here, yes, and we've all got a chance to see it, and we are joined by a special guest to boot. Let's go ahead and get the regulars out of the way. Mike, how are you?
Oh, I'm on this episode. I'm sorry.
You have seen the movie.
It was a special edition. I thought you and Justin were just going to go off to the shed or whatever and do whatever you do out there when you make up these special editions without the rest of us.
Ah, butthurt. Justin, how do you feel about that?
I definitely sense a little butthurt there.
Yeah, I do too.
Well, I mean, Justin would, because I imagine that it was... Anyway. I mean, I'm not here to judge.
I see.
I'm not a catcher. I'm a pitcher.
Not that there's anything wrong with that, Mike.
Not at all. Not at all. I'm just saying that...
I see where you're going.
Shame just figured you're a lot bigger than Justin, so...
So, Justin, is the excitement higher or lower at this point now?
It's weird. I hate to say it's anticlimactic, but it's always kind of anti. You know, you build up to this thing normally. You build up to it for 9 months or a year or whatever, but we've been building up to this for almost 2 years now, so...
You'd think after this we'd at least have a baby to show for it.
We kind of suspected, I think most of us suspected that afterwards it'd kind of be like, oh, okay, now what?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm wearing down a little bit. The excitement has sort of slipped away, but it was a fun ride, and it was a fun hour and a half, and excited to talk about it.
Speaking of pitcher and catcher, he plays both. It's Chuck.
Hold on a second, Gary. I literally actually just got home when you started the call, so I have to pull my pants up. Okay, there we go.
Well, this one's gone wrong. I'm in a hurry.
I say, isn't Friday Scouts Night, Chuck? What the hell are you doing?
No. Dude, it was like a 45-minute wait at Apple. Because I went with my dad and my sister, and then we went out to eat afterwards. It was like a 45-minute wait to get a table. Not a booth. A table.
Friend of the program. It's been a while since he's been on. He's the host of the Fooshcast. From down under, our man in Australia, it's Craig. Craig, welcome back.
You know, up until now, and being on this particular episode, being described as from down under has never scared me before. But after the conversation I've just heard, I'm feeling a little worried.
I'm hoping that your pants are on.
I've actually put on an extra pair of pants because I knew that Mike was on this episode.
Yeah, I think we really need to get on the movie discussion. So we'll turn it over to Mike to get this thing started off. Mike, you're the man. You have control.
I have control. I control the horizontal. I control the vertical. I am in command. Back to you, Gary. No. anyways, we figured we'd go around the horn a couple times. Not really a big structure on this episode. Maybe the first time we'll ask the panel what they thought was the strongest part of Retaliation. The second time around, we'll cover where we think maybe it needed a little work. And then the third time, we'll figure out what we think this means for G.I. Joe as both a movie property and as a brand going forward. I don't care what the rest of you think about that, because that's what we're going to do. So,
and thus it's been decided.
Thus it is decided. Mike's run as the moderator is a dictatorship.
Well, he's got the part right.
That's right. He beat me to it. I couldn't unmute fast enough.
Got to be quicker than that, Craig. We are much more wittier than your show.
But anyways, Justin, we'll start with you because you're, for some unknown reason, thought of as the most respected member of our community.
What does that say for the rest of you?
I know. What was the high point of this movie for you?
We just talked about it a little bit. It was a long time coming, kind of a couple of years, and it all breaks down to 1 hour and a half period of time sitting in movie theater. I was pretty hyped up throughout the whole thing. You know, you get to that point where you're like, okay, I've been waiting for this so long. I can't believe I'm actually sitting here watching this, getting ready to go. I will say... It's kind of weird. It's a double-edged sword. I think ultimately my high point of the movie was probably towards the end. The feeling that I really had mostly that this was truly a G.I. Joe movie. Roadblock cruising through in his Treadripper tank, blowing the crap out of his tanks. I think just that little series of events at the end with, you know, kind of corresponding with Flint and Snake Eyes infiltrating the UN assembly in Fort Sumter, and just kind of that whole period of time where the team kind of all comes together and finally vanquishes Cobra and does what they need to do. But that was probably my high point of the film.
Next, we'll turn it over to a man who, it's rumored that he's seen the movie. We'll put him to the test now. Chuck, what did you think?
So many things I like. You know what? You guys are going to laugh at me, but I got to say it. Seeing Major Blood in the beginning.
Can you clarify for fans that might have missed that?
We should specify exactly where this happened, yeah.
Right after the credits, when they're doing the general synopsis and overview of what happened in Rise of Cobra, and where we are today.
Oh, between Rise of Cobra and Retaliation?
Yeah, that little bit.
Yeah.
There was like this little scene with the global map. They were talking about who's from Cobra is still at large, and very quickly we get a little flash as the camera's moving of Major Blood. But just the fact that he was there and that he could be in the future somewhere involved with this franchise says to me that, you know what, this is okay. This is G.I. Joe as I know it.
Yeah.
Craig, why don't you take the floor and explain to us what the high point of Retaliation was for you?
It's strange because we'd seen it so many times in the trailers, I didn't think it necessarily would be, but the ninja fight on the mountain was pretty amazing. Mm-hmm. We only got a taste of it in the trailers, it turns out. And watching the entire sequence from beginning to end, pretty much from the time that Storm Shadow sits up on the crazy bio bed, mystic healing mechanical thing, from the time he sits up and puts his shirt on through to Jinx hugging Snake Eyes at the end, I thought that whole sequence was pretty amazing.
Gary, why don't you add your 2 cents to the bank?
Favorite moment, I really enjoyed Prison.
Mm-hmm.
I thought Walt Groggins was great.
He was fantastic.
He was a smart ass. I think he said things that we say on the forums all the time. Snake Eyes dressed in black. I got the Johnny Cash thing going on. Oh, we got Cobra Commander and Destro here, and now you. It's like my first round draft pick.
Yeah.
I think he did a great job. It's a shame that he was only in for that part, because I really enjoyed that part of the movie with Walt Groggins.
Yeah, he was great.
With that said, not to sound like the rest of the haters, but the death of Duke, I think the death of Duke needed to happen to push the story forward. If Cobra or the U.S. government came and just killed the Joes and they were nameless and faceless, I don't think the feeling of wanting to get even, from my point of view, sitting in the chair in the theater, would have been as strong as at the end. Okay, the Joes got even for what happened to their team and their leader, and the guy that we know is Duke, and it made the victory seem a little bit sweeter. True, the situation with Duke is very open-ended. We never really did see his body. All we saw was his dog tag. They talked about him as he were gone.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the death of Duke, or the image of Duke dying, needed to happen to push the plot forward, and that actually worked for me.
I've got a question about that, actually. I thought that was his body that Roadblock was kneeling over when Flint came up and said, "We gotta go." Was that not him?
Well, that's funny, because that's what my daughter said when we were talking about it tonight. She goes, "Wasn't that Roadblock was bending over her body and pulled the dog tag off Duke?" And I said, "I don't know. I couldn't get a good ID." But from her point of view, as a 9-year-old watching the movie, and when I first started collecting Joe, I was her age.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I could get that impression as well.
Yep.
I agree, well, Gary.
I certainly thought that was him.
I wasn't sure, because I thought for a second it might have been Mouse. Now that we're talking about it, I think maybe it was shot that way. If they wanted you to know it was Duke, you would have had a top-down camera angle. You would have seen his face clearly.
Yeah.
So, like Gary said, I think it's kind of open like that.
I think Chuck's actually right on this one. If it was Duke, we'd have seen Duke. And there's probably some footage out there where it is Duke. But for the sake of G.I. Joe 3, I don't think it's Duke. Personally, if I had to pick my high points in the movie, I really loved the character interaction. And it wasn't just in places where you'd expect it to be. I mean, obviously, Flint and Lady J got a couple scenes together. Roadblock and Flint, Roadblock and Lady J, what have you. But they were finding ways to pair off different characters and just give them a moment. We saw Lady J and Jinx when the ninja group was breaking into the gym. We saw General Colton and Storm Shadow when they're handing out weapons in his kitchen. There were all kinds of opportunities to pair off characters in different ways, and they took the opportunity and they didn't belabor it. They didn't beat you to death with it, but within a couple of seconds, you knew how these characters reacted to one another, and it was really cool. The other part of the movie that I thought was just outstanding, I love Jonathan Pryce in this movie.
He was fantastic, yeah.
Easily the best actor in the film.
Yeah, I mean, you'd have probably thought that anyway, but man did not take the easy paycheck. You really got the feeling that he's playing two different people the entire time, except when it didn't need to be. Like I said, just a very good, very nuanced performance, and something that you wouldn't think a respected actor like that would be pulling out for G.I. Joe, but he's truly just a pro's pro. I could watch that movie again and again just to watch that guy.
Yep.
We've got all of our high points out of the way. I don't think anybody in this discussion is going to say that Retaliation was in any way, shape, or form a bad movie, but obviously it's not a perfect film, and there's going to be some places where we think that maybe need a little work. Again, as I said before, we'll take this second go around to kind of cover that. Justin, why don't you go ahead and start this off? What do you think, if you could pick one spot that you would like to kind of get a mulligan on in Retaliation, what would that be?
I can't think of one single spot in the film. I think if there was one theme of the film, I would just say it needed some work in editing. It was obvious that all the TV spots and all the movie previews and all the commercials and stuff we saw, that there was some footage cut. And I know in the interview that Dave and Russ did on our behalf with John Chu in London, he mentioned that there were some cuts made, a lot of them at the last minute, to try to comply with a PG-13 rating. And I can kind of see that, except that they cut the scenes very weirdly. Like, in some spots, especially in the beginning of the film, the action was kind of herky-jerky. We've all seen the preview of Flint kind of, like, skidding underneath the shelves and popping up and firing a couple shots. In the advertisements, he popped up and faced the camera, fired a couple shots. The scene kind of made sense. In the film, he skidded, and, like, just as he got up, he was actually facing the other way. You kind of heard a gunshot, then it skipped away, and you heard the second gunshot, and it was just very weird. It wasn't just that they moved scenes, it was that they removed like little snippets of the actual action sequences that really made it feel kind of okay, well, what happened? What's going on here? And I don't know really what the purpose of that was, because it couldn't all have been to me to PG-13 rating. The editing was a little funky and a little off, I think. Whether that was an executive decision, I kind of surmised on my site that they might have been trying to really make it a more of a kid-friendly movie by cutting out little snippets that might have been more aggressive. I'm pretty sure we all know about the whole bar scene that was supposed to be in the film that got cut. The entire scene got cut, where you see Lady J sitting on the bar and DJ Catrona walking around with his six-pack out and all that stuff. Then that roadblock saying the Joes are like a fist and all that stuff. That was all in a single bar scene, and that entire scene seemed to get dropped. Aside from scenes missing, I think it was just the way some scenes were edited that really felt a little out of place. And I'm not exactly sure why they did that, but it definitely had an effect. There was more than one instance where I was watching the film, trying to get into an action scene and kind of going, oh, what just happened? They broke the fourth wall a little bit, or third wall. I don't remember what the saying is. But, and Craig, being a movie maker like he is himself, probably knows exactly what I was talking about. When I was in film class in college a long time ago, like one of the first things they teach you is, I don't know if it's like perspective, or there's like this invisible line that goes through a shot. And you try to stay on one side of that line.
The easiest way to think of it is the 180 rule.
I think that's exactly what it is. You never want to jump like into a totally separate viewpoint without gradually leading the viewer that way. And I felt like in some cases they shot from one perspective and then immediately changed to another perspective, and it just really kind of took you out of the shot a little bit. That happened more than once. So it happened throughout the film, and I don't know exactly what the source of it was, but it was a little bit disorienting, and that's probably my biggest complaint, because especially at the beginning, there were so many great parts, so many potential for great parts at the beginning, and this is kind of what I was alluding to earlier. If the editing was better, I would have said the first 20 minutes were the ultimate G.I. Joe film, where they're dropping from the howler, where they're doing this combat assault in Pakistan, where they're rescuing the Korean defector, where they're doing all this stuff. That was very much what I expect from G.I. Joe. Their technology is a little bit better than who they're fighting, so they kick their asses pretty soundly. But the issues with the editing just really kind of pulled me out of that first half hour. So that's kind of my biggest area from improvement that I will come up with. And I really hope that if they do some kind of director's cut for a DVD release, like John Chu intimated that they might, I really hope they start replacing some of that missing footage, because I think replacing that footage, not being so concerned with removing some of that footage, would make for a much smoother transition between scenes and a much better overall effect.
And we all know that that's a complete lie, because they didn't have movies when you were in college. But Craig, let's move on to you. You said that you had something to add on to this before.
Yeah, I think that Justin's hit part of the nail on the head. The editing was definitely very choppy. My biggest issue with the film was the choppiness. I really feel like we ended up with 3/4 of a movie. The rest of the movie that got left on the cutting room floor took out a lot of the parts that I really feel like the film needed. A lot of the character, a lot of the arcs for characters, I assume have gone onto the cutting room floor. One example of that I can think of right off the bat is Flint. I listened to the spoiler episode you guys did with Dave, and he said, oh, Flint's his favorite character. Flint was my least favorite character, because he wasn't a character. Flint starts off where they inexplicably say, okay, Flint, you stay here, and he moves and puts the flag up on the flagpole. So, okay, so he doesn't listen to people. Then later on, when they're assaulting the nuclear silo, it's, Flint, you stay here and do this thing. All right, so instead of that, Flint goes off and does something else, which still helps, but there's all these things of Flint ignoring command. So I'm like, all right, no problem. Presumably then, at some point, there's going to be a payoff for that. Nope. it got to the end and I was like, so what was the whole point of pointing out that Flint is disobeying orders?
Right.
There was no point to it. And that was just one example of this kind of thing where there's all these things that would start to get set up and then they would disappear completely.
Mm-hmm.
Or just be forgotten or ignored or not make sense. This is a movie that when we get a director's cut, I really hope a lot of stuff goes back in. I hope we get a director's cut. And if we do, I hope that it explains a lot of the gaps and a lot of the jumps that I felt were really harmed the story quite severely.
What's more, we would hope to get more Todd Jordan footage in the director's cut.
Well, I assume that there's the Todd cut.
There's the Todd Jordan director's cut?
Yeah, where the entire movie is from his character's point of view. It's like Cloverfield. where, because he was a cameraman, so all the stuff that he filmed is the entire movie.
All right, Chuck.
For me, I actually kind of agree with Craig and Justin said about the jumpiness. But for me, I was really pissed they killed off Firefly at the end. It's not fanboy or anything. It's just, I really like that character. I really think Ray Stevenson and the writers captured who Firefly is and was. And I loved it. I mean, a lot of it is the writers, but also a lot of it is Ray Stevenson. I mean, I love Ray Stevenson as an actor, and it was just great. But, oh, I mean, I see why they did it. He was the focal point of this movie in terms of being the main combative villain, but it was like a personal disappointment when he blew up from his own fly, which I thought was kind of funny, too.
So, Gary, we'll go to you for the final word. Was Chuck's rant total fanboy or not?
Well, I don't see how that can be Firefly, really.
Really?
Throughout the comic and even throughout the cartoon, that's most people's interaction with Firefly is through the cartoon. I never pictured him with a Southern accent. Never. I could picture him with the scarred up face, but as I picture him, it's in the comic where he was the faceless master. He was a ninja. He probably spoke very softly and very quietly and very seldom, not like this particular Firefly in this particular movie. But hey, that's just an interpretation, and he's no longer part of the deal here. The room for improvement that I'm going to go with is the final battle for me seemed kind of rushed.
Yep.
Boom, done. Everyone gets their medal. Here's the credits. Good night, folks. Mm-hmm. I don't want to get on a fanboy rant either. Realistically speaking, those his tanks should have laid waste to the Treadripper.
Yep.
If they're firing armor-piercing rounds out of their chain guns, that should be nothing but Swiss cheese. They just seem to bounce off.
There's a high-speed sentry, except when they sit still.
Yeah. They never move. and then the guy in the cockpit goes, I can't find a target. It's in that grass somewhere. Just spray it down.
You got a chain gun, dude. Just unload.
Can't find the target. It's a really loud, big tank.
Yeah.
It's somewhere in that direction. Just carpet bomb.
I understand the Tread Ripper or the Ripsaw, whatever you want to call it. I understand there's a serious speed advantage, a maneuverability advantage there. But
right.
Yeah.
That's supposed to be the Hiss, though. The Hiss is the high-speed sentry. It's supposed to be the one that's a tank, but supposed to be much faster than a tank. So, I mean, I don't know. They just kind of lost that whole high-speed part of the high-speed sentry.
And I understand it was probably a budgetary thing. They only had so much room to do this with. They probably only had those three Hiss tanks as a live set piece.
Yeah.
So it was perspective and cut. And I understand why the final battle in that aspect seemed kind of rushed. Yeah, it was over pretty quick.
If I had to pick one, I'm going to stick with characters. He certainly looked the part, and it's going to be a great action figure, but I don't need the Hard Master in a third movie.
Or even the Blind Master.
Mike, did you see the movie? No.
What movie? I thought this was Three Ninjas Kick Back.
Yeah, it's funny. Everybody seemed so excited Rizzo was cast because I guess he's appeared in movies before, and I didn't have a major problem with it, but he was...
Not good ones.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt, he was the weakest link in the entire cast. Every time he
had... That was some stiff acting. Yeah,
I've been in plays with better line reading than that. That's not saying a lot.
Snake Eyes, you must go get Storm Shadow.
We must join the fight.
Must join the fight and take it to Cobra.
Flip card. I mean...
Nice.
He was cringeworthy.
Yes.
He detracted from a very strong ensemble, I thought. Much like the first movie, I think the strength of this one was in the cast, but that was one notable exception.
Yes.
So we've discussed the highs and the lows, and now we'll get to the meat of the program last, I guess. Retaliation, it's come and gone. We've gone through our own journey as a fandom to get there. What do we think this means for G.I. Joe as both a movie property and as a toy property going forward. We'll go back to you, Justin.
It's still to come. Already, it seems to have done a fairly strong first day at the box office, depending on where you look. I mean, if you look at Deadline.com, they say it surprises and it explodes with $11 million through early viewings and everything. Box Office Mojo, in doing a comparison, though, with Rise of Cobra, shows that Rise of Cobra actually did $23 million in its first day, where Retaliation only did 11. Of course, Rise of Cobra opened on a Friday, Retaliation opened on a Thursday, and it was kind of scattered over across a couple of days. But I think we've got to wait and see how the box office comes around. I'll be very bluntly honest. I was hoping the film would come out. It would blow people away. Everybody's reactions would be like, wow, this is great. This is going to be reignite the G.I. Joe franchise. I'm not getting that vibe. You go to Rotten Tomatoes and it's at like 30% critics. I don't care what mainstream critics think. Mainstream critics
hate the action movie. Throw them out.
Right. No, I know. But I was just hoping that maybe it'd be one of those few films that could actually transcend just being a fanboy action film and maybe perhaps get some actual critical acclaim. That was probably a false hope on my part, but part of me was hoping that. And it would be obvious straight from the beginning, oh, this is what G.I. Joe's all about. It's being lambasted, which is fine. You know, I've said all along, number one on my list is that it makes a bunch of money. Number two on my list is that Joe fans like it. So far, number two on the list is seeming to come mostly true. I'm hearing a lot of same type of complaints that Craig has and that I have, but for the most part, people seem to be fans of the film by and large. So I think the Joe fan reaction has been good. We'll have to wait and see how box office reaction is. The good thing is it was a lot, well, I don't know about a lot, but it was less money to shoot than Rise of Cobra was. I think it was like $135 million budget or something like that. Yeah. And there's rumors out there that it might even hit $100 million internationally the first weekend. That was something that Deadline.com said. I have seen no proof of that. Box Office Mojo hasn't updated their international numbers yet, so that's still kind of a moving target. But I think the first weekend will tell the tale. If it manages to bust $50 million domestically and manages to hit $100 million internationally, I think that's a very good thing. $150 million in the first weekend would already top its production budget, and everything from there on might be gravy. So I think it's got a potential to reignite the G.I. Joe franchise. But trying to think of comparisons in my head, Transformers is a clear sign. The minute Transformers 1 came out and you started seeing reaction, you could tell right off the bat, okay, that film just totally kicked Transformers into the next century. That really caught on with people. It's popular. You see Transformers everywhere. I mean, kind of similar to what you might say for Avengers, although the Marvel Universe is already on a roll when that came along.
Maybe Iron Man. Iron Man.
Iron Man, good call. Yeah, Iron Man was kind of the first thing that kicked off the whole Marvel Universe. So I was hoping for that kind of immediate, oh my God, that's going to mean huge things, and I didn't get that. So now we're kind of in wait-and-see mode to see what happens over the next few weeks and just cross your fingers that maybe it, by some miracle, breaks $300, $400, or I hope even $500 million. I think that's a big hope for a March film. I think Hunger Games was exceedingly popular last year, and I think Hunger Games might have broken $500 million domestic and international. So it's not like that doesn't happen very often for March release films, so I'm not expecting that to happen again.
Hollywood.com is reporting that they think it is actually going to be number one this weekend in the U.S.
Yeah. But I don't think there's any doubt that it's going to be number one. I think it's just the question more is, what does being number one mean? Whether it's number one with $38 million compared to, say, Olympus Has Fallen's 30, but number one for 38 isn't going to cut it. It's got to be number one for 45 or 50, I think, in order to really start off on the right foot.
Chuck, why don't you go from there?
I sort of agree with what Justin said, that it's like a little early yet to tell. But I was concerned that if this movie made a lot of money but was crap, that's basically what the face of the G.I. Joe brand was going to be, and I would be miserable. I'm not so much concerned about the box office. I'm concerned about it meeting Hasbro and Paramount's forecasts and expectations, because that's actually more important for us. I would be happy with this being my G.I. Joe going forward.
What does this mean for the franchise? I don't know. I think from the toy side of things, for at least the next little while, we're okay. I think we'll definitely get the next few waves out without any trouble. I don't think there'll be too many things lingering on the shelves, especially if they keep soaking us with ninjas, because the ninja sequence is easily the thing that most people are talking about is the ninja sequence. So
definitely, yeah.
As Mike says, it's ninjas on the side of a mountain.
Yep. So, I mean, from that point of view, I think it's good. I think from the point of view of how much we've got to go from this point on, like where are we going to go movie-wise, it's really early to tell. I truly don't know. I think it could go either way at this point. I'd like to think that it means we're going to get more, but it's not such a runaway success that I think we can guarantee it.
Right.
So at the moment, I honestly, the non-toy point of view, I think we're, it's too early to tell. It could really go either way at this point.
All right, Gary, I suppose we've waited for your nugget of gold for this long.
General notes and thoughts on the movie. And I did enjoy the Politico cameo that was in the presidential dinner.
Come on now. Yep. We can spoil it up here.
The Politico cameo of James Carville was actually surprising. When he was talking, I look at Debbie and I said, it's James Carville. And yes, sure enough, there's James Carville. Somehow they got him in the movie. I thought that was kind of cool. I did not expect that. My daughter tells me this, is that one of Roadblock's little girls is in one of the Disney Channel series. So that's twice now that a Joe movie is pulled from a Disney Channel series.
Was it Tomax or Zaymont? Because, you know, those were the Crimson Twins, right?
It was one of Roadblock's daughters that was in the Disney series. And then the kid that played young Snake Eyes, he currently plays in, I think, on Disney XD Kickin' It or something like that. But he was also in another series prior to Kickin' It when he was drafted for the role of young Snake Eyes.
Gary Godso, our What's on Joe Mind lead Disney XD consultant.
You can only get the stuff that if you have a child that watches Disney and Disney XD that reports back to you.
Sure, Gary.
I like the fact that they had Lady J when she was undercover from Fox News and the little fair and balanced joke that the president had. The president's quips actually later as he became less president and more Zartan and he was getting a little bit more wacky. I think some of his one-liners were actually pretty good.
Yeah, I pressed it.
Also, on the timeline, Lady J identifies that the president prior to August 9th was this way, and after August 9th, she noticed all the changes. August 7th was when Rise of Cobra came out.
Right.
And it's about a two-day or three-day timeline that they had when they get the team together and then it completes it. So it sounds to me that they actually kind of moved the storyline to after August 9th when, in theory, Zartan is now in power. That's where the changes would be seen, obviously, from that. So I like the fact that they kind of tied the movies together in a timeline.
Mm-hmm.
My impression is that there are more Joe teams around the world. That was just Duke's team. And exactly. Then a team that you saw in the desert might have been a combination of teams, but not all the Joes are gone.
Yeah, because they do. I thought they said somewhere we had to find more Joes that survived or something, somewhere in that.
But they specifically say at the front, Duke's team is
right.
Flint. Duke's team is Lady J. Duke's team is Roadblock. Right, yeah. Duke's team is
they
Snake
give themselves
Eyes.
An out, yes.
Yeah, so I did notice that. Will it save the franchise? Well, hey, I walked out of there. I was entertained. I think I'm part of that group that Justin was talking about of the happy portion of the fandom that really felt like more justice was done for the brand this time around than Rise of Cobra. Yes, it is too early to say about the general audience. I do believe that ultimately, it will pass Rise of Cobra. I don't know how long that's going to take. Also, keep in mind, we're probably going to see a quicker DVD Blu-ray release, I believe. I think we're talking June or July as the Blu-ray or DVD release. If you went to Regal, you got a poster, and on the back of the poster, they're pimping pre-order your Retaliation DVD from Walmart.
I got mine right here.
Yeah, I got mine too. I don't know how that gets added into the grand scheme of things as well. The franchise isn't dead, but it's certainly on life support, and it really needs a good showing to come out of this and at least move us into the recovery room. I don't think we're going to see much beyond the toys that we have slated that we've already seen this year. We might see a little bit more, but I don't think we're going to see much beyond that, and I really, honest to God, have no idea what 2014 ultimately will bring us toy-wise as a result of the movie. I got a feeling we'll find out here in a couple weeks. If we don't see anything new concept-wise or ideas or a theme past Retaliation, right. I don't expect to see anything in 2014, to be honest with you. So grab up those Jurassic Park jokes. That might be all you're seeing in the stores second half of the year.
All right. I'm going to, again, play the role of the optimist a little bit. From where we're sitting, I think it's very easy to look at the whole of Joe fandom and think of that as the audience.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's just a very small fraction of the actual audience. I went and saw this movie with my good friend Chris, who was never even a real big G.I. Joe guy growing up. And he walked out of there with his eyes real big and grinning real wide going, that was pretty freaking awesome. And he's just going on and on about how much he loved The Rock and how much he loved Bruce Willis in this movie. And I think we have to understand that this isn't just a G.I. Joe movie. It's a Rock movie. And it's a Bruce Willis movie. And so that's kind of a couple more fandoms that it's going to plug into. I think the fact that the pace was pretty quick and pretty light, things were certainly action-packed without getting overly grisly. This is very much a fun kind of breezy summer movie, and I think that's going to play well to the mass audience. By the other token, I think the G.I. Joe name, it's a lukewarm one. The first one did well. I don't think anybody was necessarily clamoring for a second one. So I think word of mouth is going to have to help carry G.I. Joe a little bit this time around. To that end, if it works, we'll see less tail off in the next couple of weeks in terms of gate receipts, and that could certainly happen. It's certainly off to a good start. I think the Tuesday and Wednesday figures that have been out there have done nothing but build up that this is actually going to exceed the expectations that the experts had. It does have to play out a little bit. I think there were a lot of folks that weren't sure what was next for G.I. Joe, but I think that this is going to be good enough that there is something next for G.I. Joe. I saw this movie in a theater full of kids, and I hope that turns into something. That's kind of the long and short of our roundtable discussion tonight, folks. Does anybody have any final thoughts, any parting thoughts, discussion points, something that we haven't covered to this point?
I feel like we've spent past 45 minutes or whatever it's been kind of dissing the film, but I think it's important to point out that for any complaints I have about editing and things like that, this was still a very, very fun movie, and I had a really good time reliving this whole G.I. Joe thing. I think what they're doing to make it more approachable for kids is probably the right move. I thought Channing Tatum was, I hate to say it, he was great. He did a really good job kind of being Rock's buddy, and I actually felt a little bit bad when he got blown to
You were supposed to. That was exactly the feeling they were building up.
Exactly.
You got suckered in.
He had more personality like the 20 minutes he was in this film than in all of Rise of
Color. Yeah.
I agree with that, but I thought that the way that he went out in this was such a punk ass. Like, he pushes Flint away and then trips, and then the truck blows up behind him. And I was like, wow, really? Son of a... Like, it just seemed like a real punk ass way
to take
him out.
There's no blaze of glory that he went out in.
Yeah.
He was just casualty number blah on the battlefield.
But kind of how that goes, though.
Yeah.
I can't believe we've gone through this whole thing without mentioning Cobra Commander yet. None of us have mentioned Cobra Commander yet. He was the absolute shining star of this film. The way he looked, the way he talked, I thought he did great. And I hear Craig kind of hemming and hawing back there.
I'm still taking Jonathan Pryce on that one, but okay.
Yeah, I was going to say, I liked him, but I think Jonathan Pryce was the shining star of the film.
I'm going to stick up for Flint a little bit. You don't get a lot of backstory as to why he acts the way he does.
Yeah.
But I think you do see a little bit of a change in his character as it goes along. I think early on, Flint is just this guy. He's got rocks in his head. He knows he's a badass, and that's why he does what he does. And as the movie goes on, he understands a little bit more that it's not always about him and what he can do.
Mm-hmm.
You caught a little bit of that in the scene with Lady J. Well, you started to see a little bit of it when they're preparing to leave the desert, to leave the attack site, when he just kind of very abruptly kind of gets in Roadblock's face and says, "We got to go," without any kind of empathy for what Roadblock's going through right there. I think Lady J kind of stepping in kind of showed him that there was a different way to handle that to him without actually saying it to him. And I think that as he got a little better as the movie went on, I think I'm going to go back to what John Chu himself said in the interview with Dave. We're getting there. We don't have it there. He doesn't have the beret on yet, obviously, so there's more work to do. It kind of reminded me of how Flint started out in the comic, actually.
Really, what I'd like to see is, like, three cuts. The original theatrical cut that got pulled. This, obviously, and then the director's cut. Because I'm curious to see what was switched between all three.
Yeah, I wonder what they did take out for this one.
Or added to it. Besides 3D. Some of my thoughts. I'm not a film guy. All I could say is I walked out of that theater and myself, my wife, and my daughter were excited. We all thought that we came out and we saw a good movie. I could tell you how to edit a podcast, but I couldn't tell you how to edit a movie at all. So I'm not going to pretend to say what needs to happen in order for this to happen. With that said, I do want to say thank you, John Chu.
Absolutely.
I think for what he was given, he molded it into something decent and something very respectful, I think.
Dude, I loved it.
I had a great time. Thank you very much. And who knows, when this thing pans out, he might be the guy that single-handedly saves the brand. I know this isn't going to be popular with a lot of folks, but I like the fact that there was some stuff, more than just the nanomites and the president brought forward from Rise of Cobra. I think if you ignored Rise of Cobra, some of the stuff just wouldn't have made sense. you had to take Rise of Cobra into consideration when seeing this movie. You couldn't just forget about it. You couldn't do like a Superman 3, like they did with Superman Returns. Oh, forget Superman 3. Forget Superman 4. Yeah, they're worth forgetting, as probably Rise of Cobra is, but I don't think you can forget about it. One of the things I asked Dave, and he said no, and then I was very pleased to hear during the film, is the president was still whistling for He's a Jolly Good Fellow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he only does it once, but he does do it.
He only does it once, but again, that ties you back to the original film and the original character of Zartan, who was always whistling for He's a Jolly Good Fellow. I like also the fact we were talking with Dave. We specifically asked about Destro, and he's like, oh, there wasn't much Destro. Destro was specifically mentioned at the front end, and he was referred to a number of times while in the prison.
And then they killed him for no reason whatsoever.
And I don't think they killed him. Now, they blew up that portion of the prison, but I believe the cryo chamber was sealed off at that point. So he should be still there okay.
But why did Cobra Commander leave him behind? Because this is something I'd forgotten.
I have no idea why Cobra Commander left him, to be honest with you. I mean, all he says is, you're no longer part of the band. See ya. Now, according to Dave, in the 10-minute footage that he saw back about a year ago, Cobra Commander said, you're no longer part of the band, and then he unloads a round into the chamber and should have, at that point, killed Destro. That was cut out.
True.
I think he just didn't have a use for him.
Not in the script.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the old TV show. Some episodes, Destro's hanging around. Some other episodes, he's not. There wasn't a need for him, so he just decided to be a jerk and leave him in jail. I also don't think we've seen the last of Zartan, to be honest. But
I really hope not. Not with that death.
Getting a sword to the midsection is pretty stunning. It's going to stop him cold in his tracks, and he's going to fall over, but I don't think he's going to die. I think those nanomites running off of his head are probably running down to his midsection to start fixing him.
The way I kind of look at Zartan's death, I mean, let's look at Storm Shadow's death in The Rise of Cobra. I mean, they didn't even explain how he came back. It's just kind of like accepted that, oh, Storm Shadow's back, no big deal. So, I mean, I'm not too worried about Zartan. If they need him to come back, he'll be back.
We haven't talked about Jinx at all. Jinx, I thought, when she was all of her fighting stuff and everything, was really, really good. It's a shame she was a prop and not a character.
Yeah, and that was another thing that John Chu actually talked about in the interview, was that they had this whole backstory worked out for her, but then ultimately just didn't get it in there.
Thanks for listening to the show, Craig.
No, I know.
You just got to wonder what went on with that. I can understand editing the movie for a rating or whatever, but yeah, and I understand, you know, there's so many characters to deal with. You don't want to shortchange anybody, but yeah, it just seems weird that you introduce all these new characters without really introducing them.
Well, I mean, on the list of characters to shortchange, I'm all right with Jinx over some of the others.
Right, true.
Yeah. I think Lady J clearly watched Speed when it came to what to do when presented with a hostage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pop quiz, what do you do?
Even if it's the president.
Especially if it's the president.
It's like, no, it's all right, no big deal.
I leaned over to my friend Chris. I said, he's a champion.
And can we have a little kibbutz, please, for Arnold Vosloo? He wasn't in the movie that much, but what he did, it was nice to see him.
His appearance was very ambiguous up until the point that we heard the first spoilers that he was actually going to be in it. Mm-hmm. No one really knew whether he was going to be. And then we kept saying, well, he's on IMDb. He's on Wikipedia. And we're like, well, those can be edited. There's really no editorial controls on those pages, so to speak. And he always remained there. And then when we first saw the president cut his face, there was hints of seeing Vosloo there. And there was really no real confirmation. And Vosloo, to his credit and to my knowledge, never said anything.
Nope.
Until we saw the movie. And then it's like, okay, he's in it. And he's right there in the credits.
I actually wondered if he had come back to film stuff. Because every time you saw his face, it sort of looked superimposed and still. And I kept wondering if, like, they've just taken Arnold Vosloo's face with his permission and sort of, like, it was some sort of prosthetic or a trick or something. I don't know, but
but you only see his face three times. You see him as a ninja or the ninja master, Storm Shadow's guardian at some point. You see the face with the nanomites. And then at the end, when the nanomites leave the president's body.
Yeah.
I think the only three times you see his face. And he has no line.
Right.
I don't think.
I'm going to say that I think Gary summed it up well when he said that there was just a lot on the plate for this movie, and I think it did accomplish most of what it needed to accomplish very well. I'm going to sum up that argument with a tweet that Dwayne Johnson put out just about an hour ago. America's cinema scores for G.I. Joe Retaliation, grade A. Basically, yes. Means fans are leaving the theater with a big-ass smile. And it's got the hashtag all that matters.
And I think that's a perfect way to kind of wrap it all up, because I was going to bring that up as well, that if you go to Rotten Tomatoes, you see critic scores 30%, but then you see people who've enjoyed it as like 76 to 80%. And you're right. That's
there,
as
there
long
you
as
go. The Rock,
fun.
The Rock not only saved the world, he just saved What's on Joe Mind.
And I feel like we've been bashing the movie nonstop for an hour, which I feel terrible about because we've been ramped up for this thing, looking forward to this thing.
Yeah, we have been kind of critical on the movie, but I mean it. Thank you, John Chu.
Absolutely.
I want to thank everyone that's taken time already to go see the movie. I want to thank anyone that has taken any time that they've invested into the movie, whether it be following it through the papers or listening to us or reading it online, making it of interest to you. We need this to do well. I hope it does well. I think it will do well. Again, thanks to John Chu.
Yeah, I got to give John Chu props because not a lot of filmmakers would have the balls to throw all those Easter eggs the fans' way as he did. I mean, he didn't have to throw the little Zartan thing in there. He didn't have to, in case nobody noticed, the white van during the presidential press conference says Extensive Enterprises on it and has the Extensive Enterprises logo. Huh. There's the Major Blood little snippet at the beginning. It's obvious he has a love for the property, and it really showed through. I would be willing to bet he put up a couple fights about what he could include and what he couldn't include in the film. And I think he threw in so many Easter eggs for the fans that we really can't help but appreciate it and enjoy it and be glad that he was involved in the process. So yeah, definitely a big thank you to John Chu for every single fight he put up to include stuff in the film and for what he did. And even just for that Ninja Mountain sequence, those things, that was so freaking sick.
The way that I would sum up this movie is to say that everything that Rise of Cobra did wrong, this movie does right. Unfortunately, yes. Everything that Rise of Cobra did right, I think this movie does wrong. So what we need is somewhere, we need a balance between the two.
And that's the third movie right there.
Hopefully.
That's a good place to wrap it up. Let's close the lights on the movie house here for Special Edition 28.
Hold on just a second.
I have to edit this out, Justin.
Apparently so.
You might.
Damn it, Justin.
You already have to take out everything Craig said, so don't act like you're upset.
Are you ready, Justin?
Hold on. I'm trying to make something happen here.
Oh, okay.
He's trying to make some movie magic.
Hey, guys.
Yeah.
We're bringing on a special guest here.
Ooh, wow.
Holy crap.
We are.
Hopefully.
Open your Skype chat. Open your Skype chat.
Oh, is this who I think it is?
No, Chuck, it's not.
Mr. Chu.
What's that?
What's going on? How you doing?
Holy cow, our hero.
Can you see me at all? I don't see myself or anything. Do you see
No, it's an audio only thing.
Huh.
Because nobody wants to look at Chuck while we're recording, so we...
Yeah, we're not a pretty bunch, John.
We're a clothing optional podcast.
Oh, Chuck, please don't do that.
No, you're used to hanging around those movie star types, John. That's not us.
It'd be better if you just pretended that you were looking at The Rock or Channing Tatum or any of those guys. That's kind of what we look like.
Perfect, perfect. I have their toys in front of me, so it's perfect.
You too.
That'll work.
Yeah,
that'll
you work. Too.
How you guys doing?
Oh, fantastic. I am so speechless and excited to be talking to you right now.
Thank you. Technology is an amazing thing. We can just do it. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, thanks.
No kidding.
Thanks for joining us tonight.
Yeah, thanks for joining us.
Of course. I'm excited. I'm still recovering from the premiere last night. My voice is a little weak right now. I'm here.
Where are you right now, John?
I'm actually in my kitchen. I've been getting, the updates on our box office and things like that. And I've been trying to actually ignore it a little bit, but, I got your tweet. So I decided why not. I'm here.
Well, that's awesome. I really appreciate you jumping on. It's
much more fun to talk to you guys and hang out with you guys on opening night than look at numbers and try to analyze all this stuff. Because when it comes down to it, we make it for people who love movies and love to go to movies and go crazy, especially people who love Joe. So
you got my money at least once, and I'm going to go see it again.
I was about to say, I think we're all down for twice.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we're just talking about how The Rock had tweeted out a little while ago that the cinema score was an A, and we were all very thrilled to hear that because, I mean, the critics can say what they want to say, but the audience is what really matters. So I think that's a very cool thing.
Yeah, yeah, and ultimately that's who we're doing it for. And it's not a perfect movie, and I don't think we had a lot to on our plate to go after it, and I think we had to build a lot of foundation. And I'm really proud of the movie and proud of what we did. It's a big, crazy movie that I hope people can have fun in. And I don't know if you don't know anything about Joe. To get used to ninjas and military guys, it takes a little bit, but I think we get people there.
Yeah, I think so too. I think it's, I mean, that's the really great thing. You know, there was plenty of Easter eggs for the fans to enjoy, but I think it broke it down to its most simplest form, and it felt like you were out in your backyard playing with your action figures, which I think is exactly what a G.I. Joe movie should do.
Perfect. Yeah. And it was fun to blow things up and Dwayne and design Snake Eyes outfits and Storm Shadow, all those things. It was just like, it was a dream come true for sure.
So are you still making a bunch of press rounds, or are you in relax mode yet? Or are you just...
I got one more day, but it's pretty winding down now. And then we do a bunch of stuff, overseas stuff, in a couple months, cause it's not out in a bunch of other places. It doesn't come out until a couple months. So
I actually saw you in Sydney, sir, a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, you did?
The premiere.
Nice. That was a fun premiere. It was great weather there too.
Yeah, it's theoretically winter here, but it's 30 degrees every day, so not so much.
That's funny, Craig, because it's technically spring here, and I still have snow on the ground.
Yeah, actually, full disclosure, John, Craig is actually somebody in Chicago. The accent's a fake.
They hire me because of my Australian accent.
So, John, you said you have all the toys out in front of you. What is your favorite movie toy thus far?
My favorite movie? Well, I saw Mouse the other day, which was hilarious because I didn't even know they were making a mouse. Yeah.
That's a pretty good likeness of him.
I know. Yeah. You know, I was talking to him the other day, and he said that, you know, with Jurassic Park 3D coming out, they're reissuing his toy from that movie. So he has two action figures. It's amazing. What person has two action figures other than The Rock on the shelves?
He doesn't count.
Joe would be the last one I would think of, yeah.
Especially since he's in the movie for, like, what, 15 minutes or so? I mean, jeez.
But, you know who has a cool one? RZA was really involved with his action figure.
Super.
So involved that Hasbro called me and was like, this guy really is into this.
I think Logan said that last year at JoeCon.
Yes. It's a true story. I mean, I was like, how did the Blind Master toy get all these cool little accessories that are so detailed? And when I talked to RZA, he was all over it. He said exactly what he wanted. He knew exactly what would be cool for his character. So
I wonder if he bought two or three of them, and he's customizing them into the man from the iron with the iron fists.
Probably. But I know I promised him to get some of the first ones, because I don't even know if they're, I don't think those ones are out yet.
Not yet.
And so it's been hard to try to track him down, and so I saw him at the junket the other day. They're like sitting on the table, and so I just grabbed it and sent it to him. So he finally got at least one in his possession.
Great. Yeah, Joe Moscone from Hunter PR is a friend of the show, so you probably met him at the junket or saw him at the junket last week. I don't know.
Yes, that's right.
So, John, can I ask you, with the DVD and the Blu-ray coming out, do you know if are they going to be director's cuts? Are you going to do alternate versions? Do you know what sort of extras we're going to get? If you're allowed to say.
Yeah, you know what? I'm not quite sure what I'm allowed to say or not say, other than we do have a lot of fun stuff. You know, when you're balancing a movie like this, when you're continuing a sequel, but at the same time setting things up, and at the same time, for people who have known nothing about it, trying to explain what this world is, and bring in tons of new characters, it's a lot. It's a lot on the plate, and we constantly had to find where... And it's a schizophrenic scenes that are coming in and out. So we had to mellow it out even more. It was even crazier than it is now. And so we had to sort of mellow it out. So we have a lot of fun scenes, a lot of things that gave the movie a little bit more meat. But ultimately, you know, we didn't want to be too long, and the audience, we just wanted to keep them in the fun of it. So there's some emotional things in the ninja world and in Roblox world that we sort of, and Joe world that we lifted from the movie. So I hope I get the opportunity to show those. Is it a better movie with them in there? It's probably too long and winded, to be honest, for anyone to just walk in there and watch these extra scenes. But I would love to show all the fans and the people who've been with the franchise for so long, because I think they're really, really fun. So,
in my opinion, there's no such thing as a too long G.I. Joe.
Oh, you'd be surprised.
Yeah, I'm sure. See, sitting in the editing booth for days and weeks and months, you were thinking it was a little bit too long. Yeah.
I think ultimately, though, I did. There's the ninja stuff is what I really miss, because you know, you only get a glimpse of Jinx and Snake Eyes' relationship here, and they have a really funny relationship, sort of a big sister, a little sister, big brother relationship, where he like harps on her. It shows a little more of his personality. Yeah. And the problem was, when we had it in the movie, people just people who knew nothing about G.I. Joe couldn't wrap their heads around. So the ninja in the black is the good guy, and the ninja in the white is the bad guy. The guy in the black, what's in there? And he doesn't talk, but then he does talk. And when he takes off his mask, he's the guy in the white. Like, they literally, it was so confusing, and I didn't understand why it was confusing them, but I can see how that could be very, because we used to show the assassination of the Pakistani president by Snake Eyes, which is actually Storm Shadow. It's all this stuff, and then you also see the dojo where they're training. It's a whole long sequence, and you get more of the RZA, you get more of their interaction, you get more why she's on the mission with him, and it was just... it was hard to keep up. So we had to wait on the introduction of ninjas till way later, and we couldn't introduce real Snake Eyes until after you've known who Storm Shadow is, in order to keep Walt Goggins scene in.
I loved him. The whole scenes with him, he's such a witty, dry humor guy. As I was telling the guys here on the show, when he talks, sounds like what the guys talk about Joe when it's just us, or it's in the forums or something like that.
Exactly. Yeah, we wanted to make it be like collecting toys. In fact, in the chamber, the prison, rather than like the, we're trying to figure out the shape of it. Do we do cylinder? Do we do cubes? How do we do it? And there was a moment where we did a whole design that it was sort of like a toy box, clear plastic. And that clear plastic weird shape that they go in that is sort of form fitting, and it just looks too ridiculous. We couldn't go find that.
It wouldn't have made any sense for those guys to be stuck in something shaped like Darth Vader's head anyway.
Yeah.
Speaking of the prison, the future of Destro is very ambiguous. What can you tell us about the future of Destro? He's just left behind.
Well, we wanted to leave it open. We wanted to make sure we always had access to Destro when we needed to. You know, if we had included Destro in this movie, which we did at a certain point want to, it just was taking away, again, adding another character that we'd have to serve. And you'd have to serve Destro big in this one, because he finally became what you want him to look like, or at least what we would have wanted him to look like. We did some good designs of him that were updated and really, really sweet. The problem is, you know, we really wanted to set up Cobra Commander. That was a big thing for us, just to like at least set up his presence. Maybe not execute everything that we want him to do necessarily. Like, you want to see him fight and get out there, and he doesn't quite do that in this movie yet. But we wanted to set up the presence, how powerful he really was. Zartan's obviously the main guy who's on the ground, but also Firefly. So throwing Destro was just would throw our whole movie into a thing. The question for us was, do we even recognize that Destro exists in our world in this movie, or do we just stop, not even mention him in those tubes?
I'm glad you did. I think you had to.
Me too. We fought for it. There was many people in our discussions who said, in our movie, you don't mention him, nobody wonders where he went, which is kind of true, but we are still a sequel, and we wanted to honor that. If we did that in other places, we wanted to honor it there.
I agree. Yeah, thanks.
Now, how do you, in the Rise of Cobra, Snake Eyes was kind of just a dude who took a vow of silence. How do you view him? Do you view him that way, or do you view him more as the kind of the disfigured guy with a troubled past from the comic book? How does he kind of evolve in the movies?
You talking about Snake Eyes?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, the one of the main things we definitely wanted to do in his suit, at least, because that was sort of defining. However you interpret Snake Eyes, it sort of sets the tone for how you're interpreting the rest of the G.I. Joe world every time it's sort of reinvented. So we spent a lot of time on his suit, and one of the main things we kept getting questions like, "Is he a, like what is he under that rubber suit with the lips? Is he a creature? Is he a thing? Is he what?" So we wanted to show that he was a soldier, that he was a guy. There's a person underneath there. And I always loved the sort of and I don't know, I was sort of ambiguous about what kind of guy he was in there. Was he a burn guy? Is he a disfigured, whatever that may be? I just, to me, he was one of the boys. And he was one, he would be in that bar with Roblox and Joe Colton, and he'd be right there with them. So we wanted to make sure that you could feel that there was a human underneath, even though we'd cover every part of his skin. We wanted to make sure that it felt that his armor was useful. Something sort of military grade, but at the same time gave him enough stretch to be able to do his thing as a ninja, obviously. And so that was our main thing with that. And we went through, you know, so many designs. I think I keep saying 50, but I think there's more. I mean, even the visor itself, is it an amber? Is it a red? Is it a black? Is it a gray? How opaque it is? We did like 18 versions of opacity on the visor itself. So it was just a fun sort of thing to build. And I know we keep it open. I always love the storylines in the comic where of the love story between Scarlet and Snake Eyes. So to me, that was always something that I would have loved to do. And jumping into this movie, I tried to see if there's any possibility of doing it. But again, it was just too much.
Yeah, we kind of talked about that on the show, how you guys were just, the whole production crew was just juggling so much, trying to tie up loose ends from the last one, trying to kind of start a new generation, so to speak, but also trying to tell your own self-contained story. And it was amazing that you're able to kind of do it all in one shot and do it pretty successfully.
Thank you. It was literally puzzle pieces all around. It felt good. You know, to me, I was like, this, we have to do this to make sure that there's possibilities of more, there's opportunities to do more, and setting it in a world that the things that we can do can be bigger and greater than any of the movies that have been done before. So we want to make sure that we set some of those things up, and some of that is just homework to get it on the ground ready.
Actually, John, I wonder if you could answer another question that we had. In the scene when the Joes come out of the well and Roblox takes the dog tags off someone, is that Duke?
he was one of those.
we used to have this very big, long, emotional scene, and it was great. I loved it. I loved those things. When we would show it to the studio and to some audiences, it felt a little bit like people didn't necessarily, even though it felt appropriate and real that these guys would mourn the death of literally all their friends in front of them, people didn't want to see the Rock crying. People didn't want to see, it just felt we're trying way too hard and we didn't understand. It messed up our tone a bit. And so one that when he pulls out the dog tags, I have to be ambiguous about, is that him or is that not him? Because we don't try not to show too much. Mm-hmm. I don't know if his body would exist if that truck exploded, though, the way it exploded. At least his skin would be more charred up. But you can't have a charred up body either.
Yeah.
So you have to have someone that sort of represents all the soldiers, and if it's a little nod to Duke, then so be it. I don't know if you know where Duke's body may lie now.
Well, John, my 9-year-old daughter firmly believes that was Duke. She goes, "See, he took the dog tag right off him. That's Duke."
we get both sides, and I just try to keep my mouth shut on that stuff.
Well, it could always be worked that yes, we never saw a body, and when the Cobra teams came and cleaned up the scene afterwards, he was taken away.
That's some good logic right there. That's what I'm saying.
So John, now that there's two G.I. Joe movies down, and obviously the advanced returns that we've seen on this one are very good as well. Do you know if is there maybe a thought to giving Snake Eyes his own vehicle?
I know there's always been talk about that. I know I have mentioned that as well. I think their story is big. I think the ninja story is so big, and Snake Eyes specifically is so huge. I think it would be a great movie. I think that the studios have been trying to figure out what G.I. Joe, the franchise of G.I. Joe, actually is in the first place, and the tone that it should be in. I think that was the first biggest hurdle that we needed to set in this one. And once we set that world and see if the audience responds to it and will go with it, then you can sort of expand from there. But there are many characters, I think, that can break out and do their own thing. And Snake Eyes and Storm Shadows and Jinx and all those characters, they all have such rich history. We've mentioned it, but I think that we don't really talk about those things until things become more real, if it's going to be required for us to do so. I know the Hasbro guys want to do it. That's for sure.
I'm sure.
Hey, John, can we talk 3D for a minute?
Yeah.
Because we know everything's better in 3D. When you finished the movie and you saw it in 3D, I'll tell you what scene worked for me, but what scene really popped out for you and you're like, wow, that was so much better in 3D?
You know, the Himalayan sequence was always great. 3D takes it to another level to me. The 3D, we spent the most time on it because we had to actually finish some of that stuff for the first 3D trailer that we were doing. So we started it first. So we've had the most time on it. It has the most detail with snow flying everywhere, so we could add more snow, which would then fill up the depth more, immerse the audience a bit more. The shot where they jump off the bridge is great in 2D, but in 3D, I literally, when I first saw it, I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
That's what we can do with this. Then this is going to be great for this movie. That was what convinced me that this is better for the movie, ultimately, to have this option for people to go and experience in the most immersive way possible.
The scene where Roadblock was going to try to assassinate Zartan and the Fireflies are attacking him. With 3D, the 3D effect made it feel like the Fireflies were all around me.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
That was very cool.
That was the first time I really noticed. I said, whoa, that's a really good effect.
Nice. That really helped him because, you know, these little Fireflies are hard to they're so small that it was hard framing. You're trying to figure out, well, how close are we to the Firefly? And if you're too far, then these little just yellow dots, that looks really lame. So the 3D gave it a little more muscle, so that it felt more. We wanted, you know, when you're sort of flying with them while they're attacking him, that gave us a lot more fun to that scene for sure.
How much leeway did you give everybody in determining their characters? Like, for example, we talked a little bit before on the program about Ray Stevenson making Firefly a Southerner, which is a different take than anything else we had encountered before. What did you give notes for that, or is that something that they just decided to do on their own? Or
we discussed it. We discussed it a lot. I mean, I gave everyone all the stuff they needed to know about what was written or done with their characters, and some read it before and some read it after, interpreting how they would approach it. Then we'd sit down, and it was scary as hell to make some decisions on that and say we're going to change it up. But at the same time, I knew that we had to do some of that stuff. Otherwise, what were we there for? So, you know, Ray Stevenson, the way – I wasn't sure if the accent was going to be great or bad for the role, other than he embodied it in every way. When he talked about Firefly, we talked about who is Firefly, and he's like – Is he someone who's just obsessed with explosions? Someone who's the best of detonating bombs in any way, and he literally is crazy, and he thinks that explosions aren't destroying things; it's actually creating things. He has a spiritual love of explosions, and that he's creating art when he's blowing things up. And so when he does it, he loves it more than any of the other characters. That it's his art. And he's offended when people, you know, see it as destruction or survive his art, because that was never his plan. I think that was a fun way to go about it, and the sort of Southern drawl that he brought to it made it more crazy. There was a point where Firefly would even like cut his own skin and put wires in his skin, like tattoos, so that he can detonate and undetonate bombs by touching them. Which was going way further, but that was always in sort of the DNA of how crazy this guy is. And you'd see him, like, we had this drawing of him, this illustration of him in his bathroom, this nasty old bathroom, and he's literally, his back is cut up with this stuff, and he's just ripped, and you just see these wires built into him because he's just obsessed with the energy of constantly keeping energy going. And so that kind of stuff made it interesting to me, at least, even though we didn't do all those things, it was sort of in the DNA of the character he was creating. So I sort of got used to it and was like, okay, I think it works and we'll take a risk on that one. When we did for Roadblock and Flint and Lady J, we came in and did rehearsals, and he actually told them that I'm going to pretend just to jump into playing characters, because it's hard to make that leap from on the page to just doing it out loud and living it, especially when these characters have never existed in real life before. So I literally was like, I'm going to pretend to be a documentary filmmaker shooting a documentary on the G.I. Joes. So every time you come into this room, you guys are who you are, and I'm going to ask you questions, and I'm the documentary filmmaker. So just talk. You guys are going to say things that don't make any sense, that are against the comic book or with it, or you'll say things that we'll correct later. It's fine. Just go with it, make commitments, and let's build history right now. So that's what we started doing. I started interviewing each one individually. I would set up scenes. I'd say, okay, this is when Roadblock recruits Lady J. And Lady J, you know everything about Roadblock. You've watched his career. You look up to him. You want to actually change the interview from about being about you to being about him. And then I'd go and whisper in Roadblock's ear, and I'd say, Roadblock, this girl you don't think is up to par. You actually know her father. You worked with her father. And so we built these things. And then we would do the recruitment meeting and just let them play it out until I just let it go on until it was awkward. And then, so we had that history in our back pocket. And of course, whenever we would continuing to build their relationship in these fake scenes, they had history they could always go back to. So when they're in the desert and he looks at her and she asks him to be his leader, they can recall that moment where they first met and she said he looked up to him because of all the books she read of what he's done in the battlefield and blah blah blah. Like, that relationship was built off of just exercising it. So everybody had a different way of finding it, and it was just about us doing sort of working it out to see if it's going to fit the movie and the story, and was it interesting enough for us.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Did you actually keep anything that you came up with in those workshops?
I do somewhere. I told them I'd never show anybody, and it was always in safe hands, and I would never give it to the studio. So I have it somewhere, but until I get their permission one day, I will never ever show it. So, but it's fascinating stuff. I can tell you, it's amazing stuff, and credit to all of them for just committing to it, because I know other actors who wouldn't necessarily do that, and especially someone like Dwayne, who I'm like, okay, we're in a desert and we're really in an office building and the carpet is really like that nasty carpet and he's crawling on the floor and his elbows are bleeding from it, and he didn't say, this is ridiculous, John, I'm not rolling on the ground, I'm this big, and so when I roll on the ground I hurt myself. he just did it. So that was really cool.
He is a pro's pro. Speaking of pros pro, that we've talked about in this recording, in this episode, of a breakout star, and it's really hard to say someone as seasoned as him was a breakout star in this movie, but we really enjoyed him very much, was Jonathan Pryce.
Oh, yeah.
Jonathan Pryce brought a tortured character, a crazy character, and made it a president of the United States. How was it working with this guy? I mean, he obviously had a way different role than anybody else in the entire movie had to play. He had to play two people.
Yeah. And this guy is freaking brilliant. Jonathan Pryce was probably on set more than any of the other actors, because we shot so many things while we were shooting him. So he was sort of our mascot throughout the whole shoot. In terms of, he made that role his. Every part of Zartan, he would crack the most crudest jokes as Zartan. I mean, he was Zartan when he was Zartan. He would make remarks that you would blush at, and we had to erase from our hard drive.
Oh, they're erased. Oh, man.
You would never expect it. He's so dry. Even meeting him for the first time, I thought he hated me because he was just so dry. But you realize like that he's the nicest, kindest guy, and he's just having so much fun with this role. Even in that scene with the nuclear talks, he just, he owned it. You know, it's hard to shoot that scene. I realize I never want to shoot a courtroom drama ever in my life because first.
Oh, I was really hoping for you for the end sequel.
I think I'd be really good at that. I think I'd be really good. No, I would be horrible because I literally am sitting there and it's a round table. Everywhere I turn the camera, it looks exactly the same. And it's literally, Jonathan just turned to me. He's like, just keep the camera rolling, John. I'll do the rest. And it really was like that. It was amazing to watch a master like him sort of orchestrate that room and just own every piece. It was the only way I described it was just delicious. Everyone was just watching because you never knew what he was going to do. He changed the lines every time, and it was entertaining. He was bringing his theater sort of prowess to the stage because he was just. The whole crew and cast was just in awe as he just kept going over and over. Okay, it was pretty fun.
Yeah, he was great in the movie. Just a former Bond villain, and having him in this movie is just awesome.
And he's the only one on our movie, and I looked this up specifically. He's the only one on our movie who has done more movies than Bruce Willis. So I always had in my head, if Bruce ever says, "Oh, he's had all this experience doing this and this and that," I was going to bring Jonathan in the room and say, "Well, Jonathan, what do you think?"
Well, John, speaking of Bruce Willis, his wiki page has been updated and it has put G.I. Joe Retaliation and has ranked it as a box office success in his biography.
Nice. Well, the numbers are starting to come in, so I think he may know more than us right now. So we'll see.
He's got that inside track.
Yeah, no kidding.
Exactly. That's pretty cool.
I think he is.
We were just hanging yesterday. That was a fun. It was really fun to see him. I haven't seen him for a little bit. So he was in good spirits, and we started talking about all things Joe yesterday.
Nice. That's beautiful.
I'm glad that he enjoyed his role. Being Joe Colton, because it could go either way with someone as seasoned as him as an action star.
Oh.
And I just can't picture Joe Colton as anybody else now, provided that you don't flock his head.
I was scared of when he sees the movie for the first time, what he's gonna react to it. And he's been nothing but positive and so excited about it. He just loves it. I mean, he loves big action. He loves Joe Colton. Just he oozes. That Bruce thing, and when we were on set, he molded a lot of those jokes. The Brenda stuff, we talked hours. He was obsessed with that joke, and I honestly didn't quite fully get it, but I sort of trusted him on it. And when it started happening, literally the crew could not stop laughing the whole time. And he just latched onto Adrian and just basically harassed
him. I would too.
It was. it was pretty awesome to see that relationship grow and become a part of the movie because it was that was like them going back and forth was pretty much their relationship in real life as well.
Now the Colton team during the final assault, was that supposed to be an homage to the Adventure Team at all or anything back to the 12-inch vintage Joe?
A little bit. I mean, it wasn't anything specific, although okay. We did have some more throwback stuff. It just became, I just didn't want to, we wanted the older generation Joes to be a part of it. And then we were going to throw in a bunch of characters that you might recognize or know in that part. But then you sort of waste those characters and that you can never, ever do another introduction of those characters. And then you set their age and you said, there's a lot of things we would have set. But I believe when we first wrote that, it was written as there's specific characters that we put in there that were a part of that team.
Okay.
Yeah.
How much of a fan of G.I. Joe would you say Bruce Willis is now?
Yeah. You know, I think he was really very upbeat yesterday about the Joe world. I don't know how much he knows about the 80s Joe with ninjas and Cobra Commander and all that stuff. But he seems excited and up for it. So who knows?
Excellent. Work those ties, man.
It's like Bruce Willis, JoeCon 2014.
Yeah. We're already counting down the days until the studio can delay G.I. Joe 3.
Oh, that's harsh.
You should be my shoe if that happens, and then say that comment, and then it hurts. It was crazy, man. Those were crazy times.
What can you tell us of that? Because we've heard Daryl DePriest from Hasbro at Toy Fair say what happened. He literally, the phone rang, he picked it up, and that's how he found out. I don't want anyone to get into trouble or anything, but how did that all pan out? Because for us, it happened so quick.
No, it did happen quickly. It was one of those, it was very simple, though. It wasn't like a bit crazy conspiracy. It was very straightforward from what I experienced in it. I know that when they called me in, we were on a rush to finish this movie. We were literally so close to not making the deadline, and we were tight, and I was mixing at the same time I was color timing. And we had talked about 3D throughout the whole process. There was even offers from companies to do it for free and getting back end and doing all this stuff. And I constantly like punted it. I literally was like, we do not have the time to switch this to 3D. It will look like crap because we literally come out in this many weeks and blah, blah, blah. And so I refused and pushed until finally when I got called into this thing, they're like, you're right. You don't have enough time. And they're like, John, the reality is this movie should be in 3D. We're up against a lot of other big, crazy movies. They're moving closer to us. This movie can be better in 3D. You promised the immersive experience. We all wanted to do that. You're right. We never gave the time and the resources to do it correctly, but we think it's worth doing it. And we all had to sort of look at each other, and it was a long discussion, but the reality was, you know what, you're right. We can make a better movie by turning it 3D. We can, and it wouldn't be for everyone. Obviously, some people just don't like 3D, and that's their experience. But also, the fact that they were going to put in the resources and that they weren't, it was a ballsy move. I mean, we knew there was going to be rumors. We knew there were going to be people saying, oh, why would they do this? And I knew it would hurt. People would bring my name up specifically. Why this happened to me? And they said, John, it's only going to last for a few weeks. So you got to just toughen it up. It's not about all that stuff. Ultimately, it's only about the movie. So you make a good movie. No one will remember the rumors and what to say about it if you make a good movie. So we know we have it, and we're going to be good to go. So they were very confident. They never wavered. Literally, they're like, this, you know, we'll give you enough time. And then, you know, obviously it doesn't take all 9 months. I think it was 9 months to get it done. So because we have to still close the deal with the 3D company and all that stuff. And the first opening that looks good for Joe is this March 29th opening. So my heart sunk. And I felt like I got punched in the gut, but I knew that it was
one. We were right there with you.
You're probably only 20 minutes behind me, actually. So we and you know, we have a huge machine moving, so we have to stop the train fast before you waste more money. So it happened very, very quickly for all of us. But they knew the scheduling. They knew the impact. They knew it was never a choice based off of some crazy paranoid fear. It was based on that they can do that. They're one of the only companies who don't have to release a movie right then if they don't want to, and the franchise was too important to them to not have the best movie that they could have there. So we didn't do any reshoots. Any article, anyone who says, which I'm really surprised that all these places can still claim that we shot more Channing Tatum. If you fact check that with anybody in production, you fact check, you'll, where did we shoot? When did we shoot? Who shot it? There's zero. So I don't understand how these media companies, which I respect and love, literally keep writing that we shot all this stuff. And now when you see the movie, you obviously know nothing changed with him. But it is,
should feed up, John. You should tell them. You should say that, you know, that it was Monaco, and you did a couple musical numbers.
Yeah, I just create a couple of rumors of myself. See how far.
That's right. Put Channing Tatum in one of your Microsoft Surface.
I'll be like, there it is. Yeah. I mean, it's insane that and I'm so connected on Twitter and all those things to talk back, and I realized there's nothing I could say. It would just be this roundabout thing that would just go on forever. No one would ever believe what I said anyway, because you didn't want to give away what was happening to Duke. So it's sort of, you just let it be.
I'm glad you mentioned Twitter. John, you made my freaking night the other night. We were in the theater, and I just tweeted you, I'm going to go see the movie. And just as the lights were dimming, man, just as the lights were dimming, your reply came in, and it said, have fun. I mean, if I wasn't on a high already, dude, you sent me through the roof. I was floating on cloud nine walking out of that place. Filmmaking's in my family blood. My grandfather worked in Hollywood. He was a director and assistant director for Desilu Studios.
Oh, nice.
And the fact that I get a chance to talk to you and hear some of this firsthand is just really, really, really fascinating. I can't thank you enough for everything you've done for me personally and for the hobby and for the franchise. You are the man at the moment, so thank you very much.
Well, thank you, and you guys have been great. I mean, literally since the beginning when I first jumped into G.I. Joe, I had to catch up. I had to find out who was out there, who were the biggest fans, who were the ones who knew everything, who were the ones who could define the tone as it is now, or how has it evolved, because I hadn't kept up with everything, and you guys are one of the sites I went to and kept up with. And through all the struggles and all the victories and all the things, you guys were great along the journey. So I appreciate it. And that's why I love where we are right now with filmmaking. You know, we get to communicate with the people out there, everyone who, especially when you're working with something that's so beloved and part of a tradition, that we get to have a relationship. I haven't met everyone, and it's fun to just have this thing where we all are joined together by this idea of what we want to create, and that it's an ever evolving one that doesn't end with the movie coming out. You know, there's more ideas coming down the pipeline for maybe another one. You're talking about the ninja story, and those things help me when I'm in a meeting. When I can say, well, I've been getting lots of tweets about blah, 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 blah. Like, those things help. It helps my perspective. I'm not in a box. I don't get consumed with, oh my gosh, my movie is the end all be all. Now I get to determine where the G.I. Joe world goes. It reminds me that it's bigger than any of us, any of our stars. And I think that that's an amazing thing, for a tool for a filmmaker to experience, that that through all our films, even when we do other projects that we have this relationship with everyone who that we get to create movies together in a way. And not all filmmakers, you know, it's not for all filmmakers, but for me, I think it's like, I love it. I absolutely love it. It makes me not feel alone in this.
Thank you.
I think a lot of time when you're making a movie, you feel alone, but not anymore.
Yeah, I got to extend my thanks too. I mean, you've always been right there kind of tweeting back and forth with me throughout this whole process, and it's been really awesome to kind of get to know the people behind the scenes as well as the people in front of the camera, and it's been a great experience kind of watching the film develop, and even through some hiccups along the way, I wouldn't have traded it for anything, so thank you very much, and I can't thank you enough for spending some time with us tonight. I know you've been through the ringer the past couple of weeks. The fact that you're still willing to come on and listen to us blab for a little while is really cool, so thank you very much.
Of course. I saw your tweet, and I was like, oh, I can do it right now. If I put my hat on. I didn't know that it was just going to be audio, then I wouldn't have put this hat on. But and I was ready with all these toys. I lined up all this old stuff that I had around, but maybe we'll show you some fun things.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, make sure, if we're going to do video, make sure we don't invite Chuck, that's all.
Perfect.
Just, John, anytime we can do anything for you, man, anything at all, just say the word, we'll be there.
All right, be careful what you ask.
John, I have no pride.
Depending on how the weekend goes, I might ask you for some more.
I was about to say, you're already getting... you're getting at least $12 more out of me, so I
that'll put you right over the edge right there.
That's right, John. JoeCon's next week, so whatever you want us to say, we could say it for you. We're going to be on stage at JoeCon next week.
Oh, nice, nice. Yeah, if you have any announcements or any fun things, maybe even a thank you, I'll send it your way. I would love for that.
No problem. We'll make sure that gets out.
All right.
And just for the record, you're getting $17 or $18 out of me, because Australian 3D movies are just insane. So,
nice.
Yeah, I'm going to go see it again. So
perfect. Nice. all right, guys. Thank you so much for everything, and we'll catch up again, and we'll keep the conversation going on Twitter anyway. So
of course, absolutely.
All right.
Awesome.
Thanks, John.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks.
Good night.
Bye.
Holy
just about
Joe Mine. What's on Joe Mine? Just got the shit, bitches. Boom. Justin dropped the pipe bomb.
Okay.
Craig, what a night to join, huh?
Hell yeah. I was just thinking, like, Guys, I got to get going. Justin doesn't hurry this along.
I was going to say something, but I was too busy bowing Wayne's World style in front of the computer. I was about to make a joke at, well, here comes another stupid match game segment. he lit up too soon.
Well, that wraps up one hell of a show, because I know when we started this thing, we had no intents of talking with John Chu tonight. So, surprise.
Sometimes timing is everything.
I want to thank John once again. Put that on the record once more. I want to thank Craig. You picked a hell of a night to join us, but thanks for joining us.
That was great, man. I really appreciate you having me on. I know I was the one saying, guys, can you wait till the weekend so I can be on it too? And I really appreciate you doing that. So, thank you.
Clearly, it was a game-breaking decision there.
Yeah.
Clearly, the second most important person tonight is Craig.
So that will do it for this special edition.
Very special edition.
Number 28. Super duper special edition number 28 of What's On Joe Mine. It is the review of Retaliation and interview with director John M. Chu. Surprise.
Surprise.
I know we were.
So much for show prep.
We'll catch you next time, guys. Have a good night.
Bye-bye.
Night all. Whatever deity guides my life, dear Lord, don't let me die tonight. But if I shall before I wake, I shall I say, it's been a good run from Hoodlum to Allen Estates. How could one who made such foul mistakes still be allowed to have a smile on my face? How, whatever the case, I'm glad it wasn't murder in a town you never heard of, from a nickel-plated burner. Live my life straight like a perm, try to take the spot I earn, motherfucker better learn it. Yeah. Oh, yeah, this nigga from the back block on everybody laptop, who's a slang crack block. Yeah. And this nigga from the shower hold a note like the guy who said the British is coming. Oh yeah, the niggas is coming. Get out your good dishes or something like it's Thanksgiving, niggas. And none other than the arm. Without further ado, like Freddy, get ready.
Hear me out. Got a few more things to say. These demons be chasing me like every day. My life on crutches. Devil say I'll never walk again. But the devil is a lie, cause I believe within. You're the reason that I'm still here. Even though I don't act like it. Even though I hear my calling and fight it. Trapped inside of me, wake up and can't breathe. I feel like it's 20 of me going 20 different directions on a one-way street, Lord.